everybody. This is Logan Olson.
And this is Ben Jaley.
And we have a guest.
Daniel Johnson.
And another guest.
Des Dully.
And this is To the Fucking Future.
Yeah!
So we have two guests, but really it's just Dan. Dez is here because, well, he just wanted to hang out with us, and
I'm
that's
running the remote crew.
Yeah, the remote crew today at the 5 Second Film Garage, the secret bunker.
That's true. This is our first podcast that will probably go up that wasn't recorded in a cushy sound booth with tons of professional equipment, including a television monitor that allowed us to communicate with a sound engineer. This is filmed in a garage where 5 Second Films does all their green screen magic. Are we allowed to say that, Ben?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We make no secret that we operate the whole green screen operation out of a shady garage.
And yeah, so I'm just concerned there's going to be like a helicopter or ambulance that will ruin this recording.
You'd think that, but by and large, this time, no, you know what? I'm going to shut the fuck up, because the minute that comes out of my mouth, we're going to get like a helicopter ambulance, which is like a red helicopter with sirens on the bottom.
Yes. Those are very common in Silver Lake, California, where we live.
Extremely.
You jinx it. That's
so our main guest here is Dan Johnson.
Yes.
And
hello, Logan.
Hello, Dan. Dan's my roommate.
We're reaching deep, folks.
And, Dan, why are you here today?
Well, I'm not a scientist, but I've sort of had a passion and a love for dinosaurs and paleontology for my entire life, basically. Basically, since I came out of the womb, I've been fascinated by this stuff.
I think that's fair to say. I haven't known you since you've been in the womb, but yeah. Like, everybody has their dinosaur friend, right?
Yeah, I think everybody had, at the very least, boys, I don't mean to sound gender specific, but had a dinosaur phase. I know I had a dinosaur phase where I got way into paleontology, too, and, you know, like fossils and things.
And I think the difference is some people have a phase, and some people are just dinosaur lovers forever.
Yeah.
Yes, for life. I went through the phase, and I never left it.
You even have a not dinosaur tattoo, but a tattoo of...
It's very true. I have a trilobite tattoo that I got last year.
Is it right actually, above your butt crack? Like, if we were at spring break, it would be like,
I would show it, but nobody here can see it because they're just listening to us. But yes, right here.
We'll include a photo of this.
We'll include a photo of the trilobite tattoo.
Son of a bitch! So for those of you listening along at home, it's a very sizable trilobite on his left shoulder blade.
Is it life-sized?
It's the size of like a Big Mac.
there are many different sizes of trilobites. I'm so glad you asked. I do not know if this one is the size of the species it is. I believe it's around the same size. It's about the right size of many trilobites.
It's Trilobitis Big Macus.
I don't know the genus and species off the top of my head. I did look it up, though, before I got it. I can get back to you.
Evolutionarily speaking, they're much more successful than we are. They lasted for hundreds of millions of years as a variety of species, I believe.
That's exactly why I got it, actually. I wanted to get something that really symbolizes that this is a planet that's been around a long, long time, and it's kind of a symbol of everything is fleeting. The most successful creature can go out in the blink of an eye. It's kind of reminds us that we're all just transient.
And I know that some of the explorations they've done lately, it's super deep sea work, like the one that James Cameron then did a little while ago, and also back in the 60s when they did the original bathysphere down to, or it wasn't a bathysphere, but a bathy something.
What's a bathysphere?
A bathysphere is a deep sea exploration vessel, which is essentially like, imagine like an old movie where you have the guys going under the ocean, they're in a diving bell, essentially. A bathysphere is similar to a diving bell in that it's designed to allow you to go very, 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 very deep underwater relatively safely. But unlike, say, a submarine or something, it doesn't have its own propulsion. It can go up and down, and it might be able to go a little bit in one direction or another, but it's not really designed to travel. It's designed to go up and down. But I know that in the 60s, when they first got to the bottom of Mariana's Trench and other things, they were kind of hoping that maybe they would find trilobites down there, and it's still kind of something they hold their fingers crossed for when they do really deep sea exploration, because they find species that are very weird and old that we haven't seen, that maybe one day we'll get lucky and a trilobite will be there.
The term for that is a living fossil, right?
Yes, much like the coelacanth, which was believed extinct until the 30s when one was caught off the coast of South Africa.
So what qualifies living fossil outside of, I thought you were dead, like, is Snake Plissken a living fossil?
Can we make a coin sound like when Mario gets a coin? So someone nails something like that.
I would. A Snake Plissken a species?
Fair enough. It was a joke.
An unwieldy one, but a joke nonetheless.
But, like, are there qualifications outside of, like, oh, we thought this was extinct and it's not?
I mean, I think the term living fossil is just a cool thing. I think, yeah, it's like this thing went extinct a long time ago. We thought it when we thought it was dead, and I thought you was dead, and then it turns out it's still alive.
Yeah. Fair enough. And you have plans for your second tattoo, right?
Yes, I do. I've been thinking about, oh gosh, now I have to get it, because people are going to hear this. They're like, Dan, where's your second tattoo?
You're right. Everybody will hold you
Everybody's
to this.
Everybody's
going
to hold
you to this. All 14 viewers. It's going up, people.
Right. Anyway. How many viewers do we actually have?
Over 20.
Well, zero.
Yeah, oh my gosh. No such, oh my gosh.
Zero, because there's no such thing as viewers of a podcast, perhaps.
That is correct. You have zero viewers.
Anyway, the next tattoo I was thinking of getting was... actually, my grandfather, he was a lepidopterist, which meant he studied butterflies and moths, and he discovered a species of moth, and so I was thinking of getting Grandpa's moth at some point, maybe.
Is it called that?
Grandpa's moth? No, I don't actually. Again, I don't know the genus and species. I
kind of wish it was.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'll call it. But
sure.
Yeah.
If I ever discover something, I'm going to call it Grandpa's whatever. Yeah. Just with the hopes of having grandchildren one day that they can tattoo whatever I discover on them.
In a way, you'll become everybody's grandfather. Because they'll call it Grandpa's Moth, and they'll be talking about you.
Who's Grandpa? This crazy coot, Logan Olsen!
Photo of you holding the moth.
Anyway, so let's talk about some dinosaurs. Specifically, the future of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So, Dan, when I approached you and said the future of dinosaurs, how did you interpret that?
I originally thought, well, that's a little weird, because dinosaurs are extinct. It's so paradoxical. What are you going to talk about?
We're breaking boundaries over here.
But you know that what's cool about dinosaurs, and what I really do think is the reason I find them so fascinating, is that our understanding of them is continuously evolving and continuously changing. I mean, every year they find new species, they find new little things about them they didn't know. Paleontology itself is undergoing transformation. So there is always, you know, the new things we know about dinosaurs. I mean, people's perception changes, and I mean, we used to think that these things dragged their tails and, you know, lived in the swamps, and now we know that they were, you know, very social, very cared for their children. They, you know, they were covered in feathers, a lot of them, all this crazy stuff that people don't even know about.
So. That's the shit that from my childhood has totally really fucked me up, is that dinosaurs were largely covered in feathers. Because I've read about that, and been like, oh, so dinosaurs, wow, they have, like, bits of fossilized skin that have, like, the little sub-skin structures that chicken and birds have in their skin that are clearly, like, feather-holding, like, structures in the skin. It's like, yeah, most of them probably have feathers. I'm like, that just fucks me raw. I don't know what to make of that fact.
It's crazy. I mean, what I think is interesting is that people's perception of dinosaurs is still very much, like, your average Joe Schmo doesn't really get that. They still think in Jurassic Park terms. And Jurassic Park, like, took us halfway there, but that movie's pretty old at this point, and dinosaurs are very, very different than we thought with Jurassic Park.
So, elaborate on that, please. How are dinosaurs, because I assume, my understanding is Jurassic Park tried to be as accurate as they could at that time, right?
Absolutely.
And so, how has that changed? Like, if somebody's like, oh, dinosaurs, you mean Jurassic Park, right? Could you tell me how it's different?
I mean, the biggest thing, like we've already touched upon, is the feathers. I mean, those velociraptors and things, you know, they were very bird-like and active and agile and all that stuff. But all theropods, which is basically this one group of dinosaurs that gave rise to birds, which includes all carnivores, most of the predators and those sort of things, all theropods probably at some stage in their life had feathers. That includes the raptors, it includes the little tiny compsognathus, it includes, even T-Rex, they think now, at a certain stage in their lives, they had feathers. They were covered in feathers. They think adult T-Rexes... Well, go ahead, Ben.
Well, I was going to ask. When you say certain stage in their lives, I suddenly got giddy at the idea of, like, a T-Rex that has, like, cool plumage for a while and then loses it all. Or maybe he, like, has, like, male pattern T-Rex baldness, so he doesn't have feathers on, like, the top of his head, and then he's got feathers, like, everywhere else. And, like...
Well, yeah. So, T-Rex, here's the thing, is they found many other relatives of T-Rex dating back to the late Jurassic. And T-Rex, he was a late Cretaceous predator. So, I mean, the T-Rex... Tyrannosaurids of some kind have been around for a long time, but they've found relatives of T-Rex that were covered in feathers. Last year they found one from China that was 30 feet long, which T-Rex was way larger than that, but they found a 30-foot-long Tyrannosaur, adult, full-grown, and they know for a fact it's the largest thing they've ever found that was a Carnosaur with feathers. So these things had feathers. The tricky part is that we know Tyrannosaurus rex, that species, we've found skin imprints from Tyrannosaurus rex, and there's no feathers on Tyrannosaurus rex adults. So... what's going on there. They suspect maybe that this was used for when they were babies. They would be colored in feathers to keep them warm, and they'd shed that as they grew up.
How many skin imprints do they have? Could it be possible that we just found one bald one, or one that got scared and shot all his feathers out in a comical, like, poof?
It's possible. That's what's great. That's what's great about dinosaurs is we don't know how it works.
Thank you for that image, Logan. That really has made my night.
Totally possible. We don't know. I mean, it's possible that they had maybe little display feathers. They know. Here's another thing: is that ornithomimosaurs, which are the ostrich dinosaurs, they have the long, skinny necks and they're very small. They're the ones that you see the field of them. They go, "What's that, Tim? It's a gallimimus," and they're all running around. They know that those had feathers now. But what's really interesting is last year they made a discovery where they found several ornithomimosaurs that are related to the gallimimus, and they found different stages of their lifespan. So they actually found that they changed their feathers. They found that their feather plumage changed depending on how old they were. So each of these, it was the same species, but they were able to see that what their plumage looked like was different based on how old they were. Probably maybe it was male or female, whatever. So it certainly makes sense that T-Rex might have done the same thing.
So what else was different outside of the feather thing? What are the other big changes from Jurassic Park?
Changes from Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Well, here's a big one that people got all upset about that I think is kind of interesting, is the whole thing about Triceratops. Triceratops is in Jurassic Park, and now they think Triceratops wasn't even a real species. Our idea of Triceratops is dead. And what Triceratops thinks now, what Jack Horner thinks, this one paleontologist, Jack Horner.
Wasn't he an advisor on the film as well, I believe?
He probably was. I think he was. I'm not sure if it was the first one. But Jack Horner is now thinking that Triceratops is actually an immature form of Torosaurus, which is another ceratopsian. That means ceratopsian is the group with the horns and the frills and everything. They think Triceratops is an immature Torosaurus, and that it was what we consider this Triceratops is actually the same species as Torosaurus. So it kind of means that Triceratops is a genus that doesn't really matter and doesn't really exist anymore.
And didn't that also happen to like the Brontosaurus or the?
Mm-hmm. That happened a long time ago. But Brontosaurus and Apatosaurus are the same species, and Brontosaurus it's a little complicated, but they discovered some Apatosaurus bones, and then they discovered a new species they're called, it's Brontosaurus. And then they found out, the Brontosaurus is actually the same thing as Apatosaurus. We have to go back to Apatosaurus. But Brontosaurus got so popular, it was drawn in so many books, people are still used to calling things Brontosaurus, even though there's no such thing as Brontosaurus. It's the same thing as Apatosaurus.
So in that case, why didn't they just call Apatosaurus Brontosaurus? Like, why would they?
Well, because in scientific nomenclature, that you're always supposed to go with the genus that was named first. So in this case, Apatosaurus was first, even though they didn't find a lot about it, so they have to stick with Apatosaurus. So.
I would assume that's also true of Torosaurus and that Triceratops.
I actually find very puzzling because I think Triceratops was discovered before Torosaurus, in which case they should be calling Torosaurus Triceratops. But all the articles I've read are saying Triceratops is gone and blah, 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 which doesn't make any sense to me.
That sounds like a really good way to just write a headline that gets read online.
Yeah, exactly, because people love Triceratops.
I apologize now. I'm looking at artist's renditions of Torosaurus. Just so I can, you know, people make some really brazen guesses about coloration on these things.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
I actually want to talk about coloration
yes,
really quickly.
I have so much to talk about.
Let's talk about it.
Let's go.
Go, Dan.
Again, a big thing about dinosaurs that I think is fascinating about them is they're the perfect blend between reality and fantasy. Like, yes, they were real, they were everywhere, they were a very successful group of creatures, but at the end of the day, like, we have to just guess a lot about them. We don't really know.
They truly are the Goldilocks of creatures.
Absolutely. The Goldilocks.
You were just batting 1,000 tonight. Yeah. You're like, did you, like, take some, like, witticism syrup before we got here?
We call these dynamite drop-ins.
Let's give him another gold coin.
Another gold
coin. Bling!
So anyway, the big one that has always been around for a long time, and this actually is kind of a newer thing they're figuring out, is that they used to say, dinosaurs, we don't know, we'll just look at other animals that dinosaurs are related to and take wild guesses. And that's slowly changing a little bit. They've been able to look recently, I think, with hadrosaurs. Hadrosaurs are the duck-billed dinosaurs, the herbivores with the kind of flat beaks, and sometimes they had fancy crests. And recently with duckbills, they find lots and lots of skin imprints and things like that. And they were able to look at some skin imprints on a duckbill's tail and see that in these imprints, there's actually banding in the tail.
Oh, wow.
And so that actually, just by looking at the way the skin imprint was made, they were like, wow, well, we know that this species, anyway, had a striped tail. And was, you know, just like striped animals today, was used to, you know, blend in, you know, mottled, hiding in the bushes, that sort of thing. But
As an aside, I would really truly love it if we found something like a skin imprint of a dinosaur with like a really obnoxious plaid. just had the image of some paleontologists looking at it and then looking at each other. And then looking at it, and then one of them just snapping it into a couple pieces
and throwing it into dust. Every tacky pattern we've ever come up with was originally a dinosaur pattern.
Yeah. There's like no good explanation for it. There were forests of plaid ferns in the Cretaceous.
Everything we know is a lie.
Fuck.
So what else?
Anyway, yeah, another really interesting one, though, is that, as I've been saying, this whole feathers thing is a new thing. But one of the most fascinating is a couple years ago, I believe, they found this little feathered, you know, half-bird, half-dinosaur creature called Microraptor. And Microraptor was really popular because it's crazy looking. It's like a little tiny bird. Imagine a little bird.
How little are we talking here?
We're talking parrot size. So bigger,
oh, wow.
Big,
little.
It's a bird. It's
like
a,
yay big.
Like a big parrot.
Okay.
Like it was a small dinosaur.
Like a toucan, but with a smaller beak.
Yeah. I mean, okay. It looked like a raptor more, right. So it had.
It wasn't a toucan.
Yeah, it wasn't a toucan.
Gotcha.
But what's cool about Microraptor is that he had actually had wings for feet as well. So we had...
What the shit are you babbling
check
about?
Have you ever seen those costumes of people who look like they're stars? Like, it's just like a giant star, like, footy pajama starfish costume?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but
that's what I'm imagining for this raptor. Is like a Carl's Jr. Star of a reptile.
That's exactly... No, I'm dead serious. And his tail was also had long feathers on it. So he basically looked like a little starfish that could fly around and stuff. At least soar around.
Nature's just bugging shit out back there. It's like fucking wings on everything.
Wings on
everything. I'm gonna put a jackal head on a fucking monkey body with wings for every limb.
You always go to jackal heads.
The word jackal.
It's a good word, that jackal. So Microraptor. What's cool about Microraptor is that we found him. He's like, oh, this guy's got feathers. That's really cool. He's a little feathered dinosaur raptor thing. But they were able to actually look at the real feathers because they're all fossilized and everything, but they were able to look at these things called melanosomes, which real birds have today, which are the basis of where the feather comes from. And they were able to look at this thing's melanosomes and see that its melanosomes are the same as the kind that are found in starlings and blackbirds and stuff like that, which means that Microraptor had iridescent feathers. So it was probably covered in dark iridescent feathers, which is pretty crazy. I mean, they can't see the colors, but they were able to figure out this thing looked like that.
What does iridescent mean?
Iridescent means, like a grackle, I guess that's another word you guys don't know. Like a blackbird or a starling or there are these blackbirds that they have that kind of shiny sheen to them when the light catches them. And so we know that Microraptor had the same thing, basically.
So, Dan, of those two things you've mentioned, you still haven't mentioned the particle accelerator. Are you familiar with this?
I know what a particle accelerator is.
But specifically how...
This is a dinosaur particle accelerator.
As multiple news articles have pointed out, this is super recent. April 29th, 2013. So this is...
Wow.
This is super recent.
This is the future.
Particle accelerator study could reveal dinosaur skin color.
Shut the front door.
Can you just read that right now, please?
It's the Canadian light source, the CLS Particle Accelerator, is hoping to answer the once and for all...
I'm sorry, that name is brilliant. The Canadian light source. That's what CLS stands for, seriously.
This is actually a pretty good quote. This is from geekosystem.com. Researchers at the Canadian light source Particle Accelerator are hoping to answer the once and for all... Wow, they just have a typo. Once and for all, the burning question of just what color dinosaurs were, and in the process, make millions of kids who use the wrong kind of crayons to shade in their Triceratops in their dinosaur's coloring book look like idiots.
Or their Torosaurus.
True. But yeah, it looks like they're going to use quantum mechanics to discover the color of dinosaurs once and for all.
That is so
awesome. That is fascinating.
But isn't the Canadian light source the sun?
Touché, sir.
Yeah.
There you go. But this gets to the. I don't think I've ever discussed the theory, the quicksand theory, with you guys. Maybe
no.
With you. The whole idea that as you grow up, you only have a limited library of knowledge, right? Like your knowledge grows over time, and every chunk of knowledge, every unit of knowledge, grows less and less significant over time, right? Because the fraction gets smaller and smaller. Like the fact that, let's say that the Earth revolves around the Sun right now is probably one millionth of my knowledge. But as a 3-year-old, it's probably 1/100th, at which point it becomes very important. And I have a theory that every 3-year-old has like 3 key burning questions, and it's A, what the fuck are we doing about quicksand? Like, dude, quicksand will eat you and fucking kill you. So why are we not doing something about quicksand? Question 2, the color of dinosaurs. And question 3, how dinosaurs became extinct. Was it an asteroid? We don't know. I think we know now, but at least when I was a kid.
When we were a kid, unless Dan is about to like drop some insane knowledge on me, I feel like we were already kind of there.
I mean, I think that the asteroid thing is basically, they figured it out. But what is interesting, we might take, I don't know if you're done with your quicksand thing here. I don't want to get you derailed here.
That was it. I just want to say that's my theory. Is like, I call it the quicksand theory, that there's a few questions. Yes, Des.
Well, I was cleaning my mess of a bedroom the other day, and while I was wading through muck, I actually was concerning myself with quicksand, wondering if that's still a problem that we're dealing with.
how has no one solved this issue? Right, it's never in the papers, but I feel like it's still an issue.
I have one question. We're all here. We're in our mid-20s to late-20s. At this point, has anybody here actually ever encountered quicksand? Because I sure as hell haven't.
I have, just because I built some for a fourth grade experiment. We actually did a fun quicksand experiment.
So you're part of the problem, really.
Yeah. Oh, let's give Dan a coin right there. Ding!
There you go.
So you're saying.
Anyway, so, I mean, there's not, yeah, basically, yes, we more or less have a pretty good, damn good idea that asteroid hit the Yucatan, and that was it. There is some debate as to if the dinosaurs weren't on their way out at the time, anyway. I kind of personally think they were doing fine. The interesting thing, though, is that what they are discovering that's pretty a new thing is that asteroid impacts are actually far more common than they used to think. We actually now know that we probably, and this is very new, and they're still trying to find support for this, but humanity has probably survived an asteroid impact not that long ago. So if we could do it, why did the dinosaurs not do it?
Can you elaborate on that? What did we survive?
We survived an asteroid impact. They actually think...
I think the event you're referring to is an asteroid is one thing that's been discussed, but they can look at our mitochondrial DNA and see how far, based on kind of studying generations, how far mitochondrial DNA naturally drifts, or how frequently mutations pop up. And you can kind of work your way back and figure out how many generations back there was a single, source point for those mutations, or multiple source points or whatnot. And what they found is that there's a couple choke points in human genetic history whereby our population was reduced to like a couple thousand individuals. And the stuff that we find in our genome indicates that we were a much larger population, and then suddenly we were a very small population. And then we were a much larger population, then we were suddenly a very small population again. And we don't really, we don't know for sure, but there are some indications.
Do you know what the dates were on those? Or because I have something else different.
I don't off the top of my head. I know that one of them has been loosely linked to some, super volcanism, like a few hundred thousand years ago, whereby it was just kind of like, oh, it's all very approximate science. It's kind of like, yeah, would give or take 100,000 years, who knows, or, and so it's one of those things where it's like, oh, the human population dropped to 2,000 individuals right around this 5,000-year period, which conveniently lines up with a period where we know, the entire, and I'm pulling something out of my ass here, I don't remember exactly the location, but the whole state of, Wyoming turned into a giant boiling cauldron of lava that could have created a 10-year winter, or, horrible environmental disaster that, weakened a small, sensitive species.
Well, yeah, and I've heard that before, too, but and what I'm talking about, I'm really curious if they line up, but I'm not honestly not sure. But is that we now are they're putting a theory together that actually the last ice age may have been ended by a smaller asteroid impact that would have hit North America, and that's kind of the thing that was the end of the megafauna in terms of.
Oh, it's the conflagration where basically all of North America caught on fire because of an asteroid strike.
And basically it's that North America is a suffering continent. It's the reason we don't have... we used to have mammoths and rhinos and giant cats and all the stuff that Africa's got, just our North American version of it. And it's all gone now. And they actually think that, yeah, megafauna does not do well with an asteroid impact. And there's various reasons they think that might have happened... but it also, yeah.
When you say megafauna, what does that mean?
Megafauna is, fauna is, this just means big animal, literally, big animal. So large animals do not do well with asteroid impacts, which does line up with exactly why the dinosaurs also were knocked out. But at the same time, like, we're talking the end of the Ice Age, which is only about 10,000 years ago. So, and it wasn't that big of an asteroid.
It was only 10,000 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
End of the asteroid. Or, I think it was more like
a little over 15
or something like that. But I mean, recorded history only goes back, what? Like, I think
4,000 or 5,000 probably.
Yeah, yeah, I think the earliest human artifacts that we have that are civilizationally based are maybe 10 or 15,000 years old. Everything before that gets a little more vague. It's just like knives and stuff you make out of rock.
Yeah. So the question is, but you know, the dinosaurs were around from 250 million years ago. Well, not quite that old, but they were around for hundreds of millions of years. I mean, so why, if we're constantly being hit by these asteroids? That one in the Yucatan was really, really, really big, but why was that the one to do them in? I mean, they probably were dealing with asteroids a lot over those millions and millions of years.
So what are the theories?
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't have an answer for you, other than that it was probably really, really large, and there might have been some sort of other evolutionary pressure that was they were dealing with at the time the asteroid hit. The asteroid was the final straw.
So, but they don't have any theories as to what those other evolutionary pressures?
Many, many theories. They have lots and lots of theories. I don't know if any of them are right, and it's a lot of debate.
I prefer the Saturday morning breakfast cereal theory.
Which is
effectively it's a comic strip, and full disclosure, I've met the artist and I'm friends with many people that know him, but I'm a big fan. It's very funny.
Super cool dude.
He's an awesome guy. And it's basically a Tyrannosaurus Rex turning and looking at the asteroid, and I'm going to butcher it a little bit here. It won't be nearly as witty as what Zach has, but saying, save yourself, mammal. We'll hold back the asteroids. And it's just tiny mammals scurrying away and dinosaurs bravely trying to stop the asteroids with their telepathic powers.
Maybe that was it. I mean, who's to say? There's lots and lots and lots of debate. But it is interesting because it used to be like, oh, it was the asteroid. That's it. And then now we're like, wait, I'm kind of like, well... You know, asteroids hit the Earth a lot. Like, what was so special about this asteroid or this time period when it happened? And there's lots of possibilities. We could talk at length, but there's not a lot to support it. We don't really know.
I smell a script here, like a Fifth Element-esque, like, alien invasion.
Yeah, where it was caused by something we did in the future.
Yeah.
We wiped out the dinosaurs.
Fuck, dude.
Because we had to. Because if we didn't, we never would have existed.
It's true. We'd just be rats.
Well, and I got to tell you, one of the things that has always stuck with me from I had a dinosaur face, and it turned into a geology phase, if I'm recalling phases properly. But one thing that has always, I was a kid, I was big on phases as a kid. One thing that I always recall is one of the many dinosaur books I had had a photograph of, I guess, what is a somewhat famous theoretical creature that some paleontologists came up with. Was basically, the question was, what would the Earth be ruled by now if dinosaurs had never died out? And this one, and I don't remember, I just can see it so clearly in my head, someone made a model essentially of a bipedal reptile or you know, tyrannosaur or dinosaur kind of creature with big reptilian eyes, no fur, feathers, and like kind of reptilian hands and feet, but definitely humanoid.
That creature they're talking about is the Dinosauroid. It's the very creatively named Dinosauroid.
That is just lazy as
it's
shit.
It's super fucking lazy. the Dinosauroid is based off of Troodon. And Troodon was a very, very intelligent intelligent predator. Kind of related to raptors, not quite the same thing. But they were very small, and they were very, very intelligent. They know they had the largest brains of any other dinosaur they'd found at the time. And there are some very interesting studies you can make about what does it take to become intelligent, and would the dinosauroid actually be feasible? And a good point that's made is that maybe it wouldn't work out because dinosaurs were around for millions and millions and millions and millions of years. People weren't around that long and we achieved intelligence. So why did we do it and dinosaurs not do it for that long? But anyway, Troodon was this very interesting dinosaur. Very, very clearly had a large brain, big eyes, was probably nocturnal, which is kind of cool. But
awesome, nocturnal.
Nocturnal dinosaurs. Awesome.
They party, man.
But the thing, there's been theories about what it takes for a species to become intelligent. And one is obviously a large brain and stimulus to continue to develop that large brain and a social structure.
But by you saying that stimulus, I just imagine like ancient god-like aliens drifting through the cosmos and looking down and seeing unintelligent species and like throwing like jigsaw puzzles down into the atmosphere, like seeding Rubik's cubes across the planets. Like,
have a copy of Jenga.
See if you can figure it out, you little mud creatures.
I mean, if you saw 2001, like that was
same
what
difference.
Happened.
That's,
yeah, exactly.
That's the monolith. It's a giant freaking Rubik's cube.
Yeah, they're like monkeys are like, wait a minute, this monolith is making me think. Fine. So you need stimulus to keep that brain moving, and you need that large brain. And then the other two things they think they might need is some sort of early form of language, or some reason that language might develop, and also then some sort of manipulating tool. Our ancestors had hands, you know, that were used to grasp and things like that. And the question is, would dinosaurs use their hands to grasp?
I think this might, and this is kind of going down a totally different rabbit hole, but like the nature of intelligence and arguably the like when we talk about octopi and how smart octopi are, but a large reason why we don't identify them as intelligent, or at least haven't until very recently, is because they are loners. They are not social creatures. And all our definitions for intelligence largely hinge on some level of social behavior.
Right.
And so I feel like that's like the idea that to be intelligent, there needs to be a social structure kind of implies that, well, the only intelligence that matters is a social intelligence.
But I think without a socializing animal, there are certain things that we consider foundational to intelligence. Like, I mean, it's entirely possible that there are creatures that don't interact with anything and are intelligent by any measure. But one of the foundational ways that I think that we measure intelligence is communication.
I think that's ultimately what it comes down to is what, I guess there's the bigger question of what is intelligence? Is it solving a Rubik's Cube really fast, or is it writing a book?
Right. I mean, civilization, I believe, is kind of the thing, is that can this thing develop a civilization? And octopi are loners, they're not going to build little octopi cities necessarily at the way they are now.
But what if a 60-year-old octopi, if they could live that long, figured out relativity?
But he couldn't pass it on to anyone because he didn't create a cultural structure to pass on ideas.
That's true.
So it's the equivalent of like the Vikings finding North America, like big whoopty shit. You found it and then you didn't do anything with it.
I like the idea of just an octopi etching in the theory of relativity with like a seashell into a cave. And then it's like, cool. And then it just kind of walks off and
that's
dies.
That's pretty neat.
Shark comes along and eats it.
Yeah. Darn!
All my work!
Yeah, but I guess there's that other thing of like, well, obviously if humans weren't around, there'd be something an awful lot like a human, but with reptile skin, like a lizard person. Yeah, or maybe there just wouldn't be, like,
of course,
people.
I love the really unsettling concept that we're like, it's like, so like the oldest structures that we have any ruins or like traces of in humanity are like caves with paintings on them. And they're like 35,000 years old, roughly, I think. And like they barely have survived the modern era. And like, I think there's some kind of more fringy, but not totally insane theories that things like the Sphinx are actually much, much older than we think they are based on erosion and other things like that that indicate they may be older. But the point being is there's nothing that humans have made that's like older than maybe 35,000 to 50,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And even the oldest like traces that we've left are maybe 100,000 years old, like fire pits and things like that. So like, is it so hard to believe that trilobites weren't building like amazing like Disney style under the sea like cities that they lived in like 350 million years ago that have been ground to dust?
I think you raise a really great point. Like, the idea of the dinosauroid, like, it would seem like, yeah, if there was a dinosauroid, or if T-Rexes could build little log cabins, we certainly wouldn't know. Like, right.
And are all our giant oil reserves are really just old plastic dumps that over hundreds of millions of years have been folded back into the earth and compressed and turned to oil all over again.
I want
to
see a dinosaur Tupperware party.
Well, mostly for all the flailing tiny arms that the T-Rexes would be with. They try to open and new Tupperware.
And they're all wearing aprons, like really silly aprons.
But no pants.
No pants.
Just like Donald Duck. Dinosaurs wear shirts, no pants.
Well, they're related to birds, and then so it all works out.
Obviously. Yeah. And then there's Daffy, who's just wandering around like a goddamn nudist.
Right.
I guess I'm just imagining that back in dinosaur times, it was like the universe in the Mario Brothers movies.
Sure.
I can safely say I have never seen the Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, it's a classic.
With Dennis Hopper.
It's 1994, the same summer that Jurassic Park came out.
Did it really?
Yes.
When I'm speaking of
shut the front door!
Why do you know that, Dennis? With such surety in your voice.
I do know that. I don't know how I know that, but I know that.
When I'm speaking of people, how I said it, we opened this with saying people's current perception of dinosaurs, and I said, you know, that's very much colored by Jurassic Park and the Mario Brothers movie. I think that's everybody thinks of those things when they think of dinosaurs today.
There was a Dennis Hopper operas.
my sum total knowledge of that film is from the full page color ads in the backs of comic books from that time period.
That was, they must have spent a fortune on those
that was
books.
That was in the back page of every comic book that came out in 1994.
We're getting way off, but who cares? I was a big old Disney comic fan, and Logan knows this. I did. Uncle Scrooge comics and everything. And yeah, every Uncle Scrooge comic comes to the Mario Brothers movie.
And to show you how widespread it was, like, I never read Disney comics. I was reading like Spider-Man and X-Men.
Yeah.
And it was in the back of every Spider-Man and X-Men comic book of 1994. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. No, Fatal
Attraction storyline. Excellent. That's when Wolverine loses his adamantium skeleton.
I think you guys should just go back and watch that film.
We should do a podcast of us watching the film, and I guess that's more of a riff tracks kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, they might have patented that. I'll gladly live tweet the Mario Brothers movie.
I can get behind that.
So I think everybody who's still listening to this podcast is burning to know. Jurassic Park, will it actually happen?
Jurassic Park, will it actually happen? Fascinating story, and there's a lot to talk about here. I was waiting for this question.
For those of you
positively burning to answer.
For those of you who can't see it, which is all of you, Dan began to radiate. He literally burst from his seat like light coming from every pore.
It should also be noted that Dan is wearing a Jurassic Park Live t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fabulous.
Which is, fabulous. By the old Murder House Theater, a live rendition of Jurassic Park. That I'm pretty sure was a 2.5 hour play, if I recall correctly.
The Barbasol shave can that you hide the DNA in. You got the toad that changes genders. You got the mosquito. You've got, what's his name? I never remember it.
Mr. DNA.
Mr. DNA, thank you. I thought it was something more clever than Mr. DNA.
Everybody should Google Old Murder House Theater. They also did Aliens on Ice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And Die Hard.
By the way, I want to say also that the one girl who was in the Jurassic Live, she was kind of a cutie. So if she's listening to this podcast, she'd give me a call.
Yes.
Hopefully Dan's she's one of our 20 listeners. Or one
lucky,
of our 0 viewers.
Lucky for you, lady, if you're listening, Dan's phone number will be posted on rocketjump.com's front page.
I do not guarantee that that's going to happen, but we will
see.
Oh,
come on.
All right.
Don't chicken out now.
Anyway, speaking of chickens, we'll get there. We're going to continue. So,
so nice. Excited.
Anyway, speaking of chickens, we'll get there.
You're a natural at this.
So, anyway. So, Abby, the question was, will Jurassic Park ever happen? And the short answer is, not the way Jurassic Park did it. And basically, the short answer is no, but,
no with a but, yes with an if?
No, yes. So, so anyway.
Short answer, no with a but. Long answer, yes with an if.
So, they've tried. Michael Crichton was very ingenious for saying, this is how we'll clone dinosaurs. We'll find the mosquitoes and we'll suck the blood out of them. That was all really smart and really creative and very interesting. And it was certainly like, that could work. Maybe that could work. They've tried it. They've tried it a million different ways.
Doesn't fucking work.
Doesn't fucking work. If you ever could do it, you know what you'd clone? Is you'd clone a lot of mosquitoes. Like, really old mosquitoes.
That's what we need. Giant Cretaceous era mosquitoes.
Yeah. But it's just not going to happen. It's just way too hard. They've looked at dinosaur fossils. They can't get dinosaur DNA out of these things. These things are at least 65 million years old. They're fossilized. They're bone.
Bullshit. You're bumming me out.
I know. It sucks. I mean, they can find, like, they found, you know, soft tissue fossilized, which is great because then they can learn about what the dinosaur's soft tissue was like. And they found hemoglobin cells and things like that, which is crazy, but they can't get the freaking DNA out of them. So without DNA, you can't clone these dinosaurs. Jack Horner, who I think we talked about earlier. Did we talk about Jack Horner? Yeah. Jack Horner is trying to do this really interesting experiment. He's trying to get this thing going, which is to create a chickenosaurus. So a chicken.
This already smacks of horrifying future biology.
It sure does, but that's what we're all about tonight. So a chickenosaurus is.
Logan's grinning and I'm shitting my pants.
Yeah. So basically, if you look, you know, if we have all the DNA from all our ancestors still inside us, right?
Right.
And chickens are from dinosaurs, and they've got all the DNA from them inside. So theoretically, if you took a chicken and you started switching and flipping all the genetic markers, you'd create something that was basically the dinosaur ancestor it came from, right?
Oh, God, this is going to turn into a running theme. Biological abominations yeah. and me getting really uncomfortable.
And the scary thing about chickenosaurs is they've already found a way to turn on the teeth. So they can they can already create tooth chickens. So
that's such a terrifying thing to call anything. A tooth chicken. Like the last thing I need is a chicken, which by the way is already a creepy animal. If you've ever actually like spent time and dealt with chickens, they're creepy fucking animals.
I grew up with chickens,
actually. Yeah, and then you add teeth, it's like fuck it, I'm out.
I did. I grew up with anyway, that's another podcast. The whole chicken growing up with chickens.
We do have a 4-H podcast, Logan and I do later.
Yes.
Anyway, so what's to say if you flip on that tooth marker, you flip on, because birds have little tails, you just flip on the thing that goes, I want a big tail on this bird, and you could even, find the thing that takes the feathers away, although now we know all dinosaurs had feathers, but I mean, you do all these little markers, you flip all these little things, you put the hands back, because I mean, chicken embryos have hands and they just atrophy
you
as they grow up.
You're just making me so creeped out right now.
You could create a dinosaur, a thing that would be like your early dinosaur, and get a look at what an early dinosaur might have looked like, if it's possible, certainly possible.
Huh. So what you're telling me is that modern science may, in the relatively near future, create a horrible chickenoid abomination that may loosely resemble what a dinosaur was like.
Yes.
Well that,
fucking
I mean,
God damn it.
It sounds like what you're getting to is like there's always that, I think there's a large segment of scientists who feel that the next generation of robotics is really just bioengineering.
Right.
And at that
robotics
point,
by another name.
Yeah, and at that point, that dinosaur we create is no different than an animatronic dinosaur. It's just smarter.
It's just a biologically animatronic dinosaur.
Yeah, it's a biological. And so it's not a quote-unquote true dinosaur. Mm-mm. It's just a dinosaur as we, that point, we make the dinosaur from Jurassic Park. We make the dinosaur from the 1930s stop motion, whatever that one was called.
Yeah, or you get one and you genetically engineer it so it has the brain of a dolphin and a horse, and I can put a saddle on it and ride it, but it's got like, it talks like a dolphin.
So what I really want is not just Jurassic Park of, this is a dinosaur. What I really want is like the exhibit that explores, I can interact with a live breathing version of T-Rexes through the ages. So it's like, here's the wacky 1910 version of a T-Rex, and like, here's the Jurassic Park era, and here's the one we think now, which is basically Carnival, and it's like sitting there with its feathers being like,
you have horrified me, because the minute you said that, my mind immediately jumped to like 10,000 years from, I was like, interact with Gary Cooper, it's just a clone of Gary Cooper. Black and white pigmentation because...
Of course.
Right, of course. And then there's also color, Gary Cooper, that's further down the hallway. Just go, let me out! Me out, God damn it! And there's huge people just going, these clones are so lifelike.
That's where I was hoping you were going to go, is literally him just banging on the plexiglass.
Why am I in here?
I'm a human being!
No,
I'll
you're
only
not.
Live for 2 hours before I'm...
It just melts into a pile of bubbling organic goo.
And then an old man just comes in and shuffles it into like...
Squeegee, like...
The bio drain where we push all the bio flesh.
The Gary Cooper exhibit is closed until 4 p.m. when a new Gary Cooper will emerge from the vaginal... What was the horrible thing you talked about last time?
Yeah, the orifices. But it won't be a zoo. It will be a meet and greet. You'll walk up to Gary Cooper and he'll hug, and then he'll look at his hand as it wrinkles and starts melting. He'll be like, well, kids, I better go. And then at that point, his nose falls off, and some kid's like,
So wait, you're telling me that we would create horrific Gary Cooper bio clones that we would not grant the knowledge of their own horrific, well, why would you? That would just be cruel. It's like a robot screaming, why was I programmed to feel pain?
It's the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy animal. The
Bingo!
Yeah.
Bam, you nailed it!
Not in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but actually in Restaurant at the End of the Universe, the sequel to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they have a creature that is designed to want to be eaten.
A cow.
That's right.
Yeah.
A cow.
And he says, yes, you should try a piece of my flank. You should try my chest. All these different pieces of me are really delicious. And he just, it's that.
With Gary Cooper waving until his nose falls off.
Right.
Screaming.
And then he selflessly throws himself into an incinerator and looks at the kid and says, see you in 5.
Holy shit. Are we going to genetically engineer our children to never fear death?
I don't know.
Will they still die?
Yes.
Let me
put it this way. They will for a while, and then we'll get to the point where they won't. And they'll be like, well, I guess we don't need to keep genetically engineering them to not fear death.
Right, but maybe it's
I'm
like
just keeping priorities.
Maybe it's like junk DNA where they don't fear it, but it's still there because we have all this junk DNA. It was like we don't even mess with it.
Although junk DNA, the big thing that's been happening a lot in the last 2 or 3 years with junk DNA is that junk DNA is maybe not junk, is that it may be, in fact, epigenetic switches that we have previously not, because epigenetics is a very new field. It's, you know, it's basically genes that, you know, we used to think, you know, you have your genes and that's what you have. And now we're beginning to learn that, in fact, you have your genes, and there's a whole swath of things that can take place in your environment around you that can switch things on and off. Mm-hmm. And we're beginning to find that maybe a lot of what we thought of as junk DNA are, and not all of it, and this is still all theoretical, but big chunks of junk DNA may in fact be weird things that have to do with epigenetics and stuff that we just don't.
So that's our, like, those are our if-then statements. Like,
exactly. If Logan is constantly drinking Chardonnay every night, then Logan will have ashy skin on his elbows.
Good thing I only drink Negro Modelo. Actually, I want to talk. We talked about Jurassic Park,
mm-hmm.
And I'm sure we can explore that further. But really quickly, what do you think that let's talk about paleontology or the study of the history of dinosaurs?
Mm-hmm.
And also, if there's is there anything that we're not hitting that you think is like a money thing?
We're doing fine.
Well, we know we're like 3/4 through, so.
No, this is good.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Yeah. Let's talk about paleontology.
Paleontology itself, the basics of paleontology has really not changed a lot. My father's an archaeologist. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I did not.
Our listeners probably didn't know that.
Archaeologist as in like Indiana Jones?
Yes.
Okay.
He's literally exactly like Indiana Jones in every shape, way, and form. And I'm like Shia LaBeouf because I'm his son.
You don't want to make that comparison.
No, you're right.
Really quickly, Indiana Jones is the dad of Shia LaBeouf?
He's the dad of Mutt Williams, if you saw Indiana Jones 4.
I'm sorry, Indiana Jones what?
Anyway, let's just...
You're offending your zero viewers right now.
Yes, exactly.
One of them's like, that was the best one!
I'm only familiar with 3 Indiana Jones films. Well, 2.5.
That girl from Jurassic Live is never going to call me now.
I'm sorry. And really, it's more like 2 1/10. Only the first 20 minutes of Temple of Doom are worth anything.
I hate that whole movie.
Whole movie sucks ass, but I would love to see the movie that ends with him in Shanghai in the casino.
Yeah,
right. That's an Indiana Jones adventure I want to see.
What do you mean? Like
the beginning? You know the beginning of Temple of Doom?
Yeah.
Where he's in the Shanghai casino. I want to know the adventure that leads up to those first 15 minutes of Temple of Doom are the last 15 minutes of Indiana Jones and the Shanghai noodle caper.
It's the short round origin story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't have to deal with Kate Capshaw for 90 minutes.
No, fuck her.
So really what you want is the Clone Wars Cartoon Network series, but for Indiana Jones leading up to Temple of Doom.
Yes.
Yeah, the Clone Wars got really good.
Or alternately, if you really want to reach back, you could do the, and I'm gonna fuck up the title, but any other Star Wars fans will be able to help me. Star Wars fans of a certain vintage, I suppose. But Prince Zizor.
Heroes of the Black Sun.
Yeah, what was the book that they wrote? Shadows of the Empire. I want the Indiana Jones version of Shadows of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
Shadows of the Empire. You played the game. It was
on N64?
Yeah. Shadows of the Empire was a whole multi-platform experiment they did where they were like, we're going to write a book. We're going to make a comic book.
They put his ship in the reboot. Not the reboot. The episode 4 like re-release. his ship is in the
background. No, sorry. They didn't put but they didn't put Prince Zizor's ship in.
They put the guy
Dash
from
Rendar. Yeah, Dash Rendar. The Outrider.
Shitty name in retrospect, actually.
Dash Rendar.
It's pretty stupid.
Whatever.
But they really put his ship in?
Dash Rendar is in the special edition. It's not himself, but his ship. The Outrider.
Shut the front
As they're going into Mos Eisley, you can look up, and sure enough, the Outrider flies.
Really quickly, I like the idea that we only say swear words during the opening titles, and other than that, is completely not explicit for the rest of this podcast.
Yes. Except you know,
Dez is nodding himself like, yeah, that actually makes it really difficult for us.
I did just say fuck Kate Capshaw, so I don't know if I guess that's
no. That's you'll be fine. It's a Kate Capshaw rule.
You'll be okay.
If you're talking shit about Kate Capshaw specifically in reference to the Temple of Doom, you're A-okay.
Right. But let's rewind a little bit. Paleontology.
God, how do we talk about anyway? So paleontology has been, as I was saying, was basically unchanged.
What is paleontology?
Paleontology is the study of ancient life. So it doesn't have to be dinosaurs. It can be...
What is archaeology?
Archaeology is basically just the study of ancient stuff. So my dad's technically an anthropologist. So when you say archaeology, generally it's more studying people, ancient people. But it's not really exclusive to that. So my dad isn't... Technically, I think I'm getting this right. Sorry, Dad, if you're listening. My dad is an archaeological anthropologist, which means he studies ancient humans. So anthropology is the study of humans, but that could be the study of modern humans. But archaeology is the study of ancient things. So there you go. But paleontology just means ancient life. So that encompasses all things. It encompasses trilobites. It encompasses mammoths. It encompasses dinosaurs. It encompasses everything. So paleontology itself has really more or less stayed the same. It's you know, if you go hang out with a bunch of paleontologists and they say, kids, we're going on a dig, you just go to some remote middle of nowhere place and you stare at the ground for a long time until you might see something.
I did that as a kid without a paleontologist.
So there you go. So you've done it.
There's a fossil bed in eastern Washington, and I think it's near Ross Dam. And my parents knew that I loved fossils, and so you go to Ross Dam,
mm-hmm.
and you can go through this giant sediment pile, and I think you pay based on the number of fossils that you take out, and they just look at the fossils, and you go, there you go, and like I somewhere at home in a Little League candy bar selling box wrapped in newspapers back at my parents' house, there are fossils of leaves. And I think I even got lucky and found like one bug. They're basically like, if you find like something that's not a stick or a leaf or something like that, that's really a big deal. And if you find something that's not an insect, that's a huge deal. But I think I got like one bug.
Do you know how old it was? How old the area is?
I know that Eastern Washington has a pretty definitive geological drop-off date because there was a giant, like, mega volcano that covered the entire state in granite something like 50 million years ago. So
okay.
Not much is... There's not much accessible that's older than 50 million years in Washington, I think, approximately.
So we're talking Eocene or Oligocene at latest.
Sure.
Anyway.
I'll look it up while you actually spread knowledge.
Dan just polished his fingernails.
With good reason.
Yeah, you know. So paleontology itself, the basis of paleontology is you go out, you look, and you hope you find some things. But obviously the tools have changed a lot. And, you know, there's ground-penetrating radar they can use, things like that it's like the scene in Jurassic Park when, you know, Alan Grant, excuse me.
Where all the Latino people are shouting that they found sap.
No, not that. That's different, actually. Not that scene. No, I'm talking about when they find the fully preserved velociraptors.
Where the fat kid is getting imaginarily ripped open by a nail.
And Alan Grant goes, I hate computers. Ugh, computers. Ugh.
I know Unix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's a Unix system. Anyway, that stuff has become far more advanced, and so that really helps people out. They actually are able to look through the earth before they start digging and actually say, oh my god, there's a bunch of bones down there. So that's really helpful. Some other things that are kind of changing, too, is... this is actually really interesting, is one thing that we kind of, like, the reason we know what dinosaurs look like anyway is through paleo...
We're at 54 minutes.
Oh.
You could just set it.
Okay. I didn't want to interrupt you.
But no, it's okay.
Luke so... I was like, what the hell was that?
Ah!
But you're like this, you're just like...
Anyway, sorry. So I think we're gonna hang on. I'll go here. So another thing that's changing is that like paleo artists used to just have to draw these things from their imaginations and stuff. But I was just reading today about 3D printers and that people are able to 3D print these dinosaur bones and scan these dinosaur bones, and actually they're trying to make small little robotic dinosaurs just to at least get some idea how they moved and how they worked, and basically create little mini dino robots. So I mean, all the tools for understanding how these things lived and worked is definitely changing and definitely growing. Another thing that's kind of changing too is that the economy sucks for scientists right now. It's not a great economy to be a scientist, to be a paleontologist. So it's becoming more privatized, a lot more commercialized.
It's just going to lead to more biological horrors.
Right, exactly. Which is, on the one hand, it's great for dinosaurs. It's great for finding more dinosaurs because everybody loves dinosaurs. But it's actually not great for science because, you know, there are scientists out there who specialize in studying mammals, the little rats that we became. And those guys are going to have a harder time because people don't care about that stuff. Your average Joe Schmo doesn't care about finding another rat that lived in the Mesozoic.
Maybe if they had feathers.
Who knows? That would change that around
a lot. A feathered mammal?
Feathered mammal would be, that would blow the whole, I mean, that would be the find of the century, man.
Drunk and a genius over here.
Crazy places. But yeah, I mean, so like, yeah, the way that science is being done, it's changing.
Drunk and a genius.
Yeah, man.
Fucking married my keep.
Since noon, I had two beers and I'm just gone. I apologize.
It's okay. It's a Wednesday.
Anyway, please continue, Dan.
I mean, that was kind of it. But yeah, like it's becoming more of a privatized thing as opposed, because there's no government.
So who's funding that? Is it literally all one rich white bearded man on an island of the Caribbean, or is it someone else?
Yes, maybe. I don't know.
Nobody knows where this money comes
from. As I said at the beginning, I'm not a paleontologist. I'm not getting paid to do this. Like, I just love dinosaurs.
I'm just curious who's private, because like I get that dinosaurs are awesome, but if you're like Logan, you need to make money from dinosaurs. Do you need to put any like investments into fossil research? I'd be like, no.
Let's try to logic this out though. So I can think immediately of three potential markets that would fund paleontology as a moneymaker. You got one, art and curio collectors. Basically, find me a fossil bed where I can find like a T-Rex skull that I can sell to a rich eccentric, and boom. Two, you got super rich whack jobs that are purely thinking in Jurassic Park terms. Mm-hmm. And three, you've got petrochemical companies that are looking for some way, possibly through government subsidies or whatnot, to defray the cost of their explorations through careful manipulation of the tax and research code.
I got a fourth.
Lay it on me, brother.
DARPA, weaponized dinosaurs.
Duh.
That was the premise
of
Jurassic Park 4 for a while.
God damn it.
Which I'm glad they changed. But it was going to be like Dino Mandos, like Raptor. Yeah.
I'm just curious.
You mean
how
a dinosauroid?
Like,
yeah.
Basically. Like put yourself in the shoes of a terrorist in Iran.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, I'm trying.
And you just found out SEAL Team 6 is headed for you.
Uh-huh.
You hear them dropping down on the building next to you. Phew, you've avoided.
Okay.
You kick open your door, and you see a velociraptor standing there with a machine gun strapped to its head.
I would be scared.
I'd be more scared if the velociraptor was holding it.
With
not
its hands?
Just strapped to it. Yeah, like maybe we grafted a thumb onto their little claws.
Maybe we unlocked genetic markers. And
What if we also genetically modify it so it has human lips, so it went, you're fucked.
What a terrifying thing. Again, straight into the biological abomination zone.
Can I
get a special sound effect for when Logan creeps me this shit out with creepy bioengineering?
You know, honestly, if
just
I was...
fade in creepy music when
they start... And then just do a theremin sound, but with like a soft, like wet organic pumping noise in the background.
Honestly though, like if you were gonna go, wouldn't the coolest way to go would be to be taken out by a velociraptor?
Like... So wait, you're suggesting that some like the Hezbollah terrorist or something would be standing there, the door would kick open, and right before he does, he goes, "Son of a beach, this is amazing."
Son of a beach, this is amazing. Son of a beach. Son of a beach. It's like something out of fucking True Lies. Exactly. True Lies too.
Fucking dinosaur to kill this like cliched Hollywood terror.
I was saying, snap zoom to extra.
Son of a beach.
Son of a beach.
Dinosaur.
A raptor eats him. like, you know, Terra's on the back of Pterodactyl, fist fighting with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I mean, I would watch that movie.
No, so would I.
Yeah.
I think we all would.
We've decided to replace our drone fleet with pterodactyls with human lips so they can kiss our enemies.
What if we genetically engineered the raptors to have quadcopter drone spines that we mass produce out of carbon fiber? If we're going to start making biological horrors, then let's not hold ourselves to the limits of biology. Let's make them so that they're only full creatures when we fucking whatever you do with carbon fiber.
I'm going to go ahead.
Those quadcopters onto their backs.
I'm going to go ahead and just recommend a backpack from Target filled with helium balloons.
Also perfectly valid.
So they're just kind of hanging there really flaccidly, kind of like looking really embarrassed
with a giant
each other.
Human lips. Biting themselves, shrieking in pain because their razor sharp raptor teeth are biting their giant simian lips.
Those raptors have lips that look like they could kiss.
And it's one beautiful raptor lazily floating through there with a machine gun and a backpack full of helium balloons. God, I love living in the future.
To the future.
Just choked on tinfoil.
Logan won't ever get to see that beautiful, beautiful vision because he choked on tinfoil.
How far are you years in the future do you think that day is coming?
It's 15, 20 years tops.
The Kissy Lip Raptor
Kissy Lip Raptor Murder Squad sent by the U.S. government.
I think the real question is, do they already exist and we just don't hear about them?
Almost certainly.
Did you guys hear about the quantum network that they've been running?
Yeah, that apparently they were just like, oh yeah, we've been doing this for years. Like, whoa, what?
I think it's really easy. Like, people are like, dude, the internet's so everywhere. There's no secrets anymore. It's like, oh, no. No, sir.
There are secrets.
There are most certainly secrets still being preserved. Like, it's the whole stealth bomber that we didn't know about for 25 years, right?
Right. Exactly.
Like, and now in this case, it's quantum encryption where, like, everybody's been working really hard and then, like, a government laboratory comes and is like, we've been doing this for 2.5 years.
But the best part about that was, I don't even think that they were like, oh yeah, we've been doing this for 2.5 years. They were talking about something else. Like, well, yeah, using quantum encryption. And they was like, oh, I'm sorry, what, quantum encryption? This thing, we figured it out like a year or two ago. And anyway, and then they moved on. I was like, back the fuck up.
So, anyways, the Kissy Lip Raptor Brigade is most likely already
somewhere
in operation.
As we speak right now, there is a break room with some old kind of ugly 70s era couches with some kind of like pea green and like tan heavy woven fiber. And there's a few raptors with big kissy lips and mustaches. And they have just taken
feathered
out.
Feathered mustaches.
Yes, feathered mustache. Thank you. And they have just taken out someone so horrible that we will never know about because of their sacrifices for our freedom. And their balloon backpacks are hooked to the wall, gently bobbing in space, dunking against the wall. And they're sipping their coffee saying, jolly good show, man. Right, and then their American counterparts, because many governments have them.
There's a Tom Clancy novel that it's going to be called The Kiss of the Raptor.
I'm imagining like the scene in G.I. Joe where Channing Tatum is playing Xbox 360 with The Rock. A similar sequence having between raptors was, man, I can't handle these controllers. They ain't made for raptor hands.
No, you've made it even better for me. It is Channing Tatum, and it is The Rock and a raptor playing Xbox together because the Raptor is a huge fan of the G.I. Joe movies and has a super secret USO reward for a creature that can never walk among us, though he loves us and considers himself a part of America. He gets to play Xbox with Channing Tatum and The Rock.
I hope his screen name is Kissy Lip Raptor.
God, I hope so too.
How are we doing on time, Jesus
Christ?
About an hour 15 now.
Holy shit.
Wow, a Kissy Lip Raptor Society really took us for a loop.
Well, from one Kissy Lip Raptor to another. That's it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dan. Yes.
I think we learned a lot about raptors and what their potential is. With those old dinosaurs.
I think we should all sign off with our best, all three together, our Kissy Lip Raptor noise.
Okay.
We should all do it at the same time.
Okay.
Not, it's 1, 2, 3, go. Not 1, 2, 3. Yeah. Okay? 1, 2, 3.
Just the fucking granny noises.
All right, everybody, to the fucking future.
To the future.
Fucking future.
Yes. Woo. There you go.